Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here again this week and looking forward to our show. I'm in sunny Honolulu this week. And for those of you that are listening elsewhere, the weather's starting to break, and hope all's well. Today we have a wonderful guest. We're actually, instead of splitting the show up today, we're going to be talking specifically about investing and renovating and a lot of great information. Travis Whitmire is going to come on in a couple, less than a minute. And today, if you want to call in, the call-in number is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428. So we're going to be talking about real estate investing, be of renovating, developing, CPRing, going green. Travis is going to join us to discuss how to renovate, create, and sustain. He's president and founder of Blue and Green Innovations, based in Honolulu, Hawaii. He has firsthand experience, years of experience, should I say, in construction and architecture. Now he's taken all of his experience to create a really win-win solution, and he started Blue and Green Innovations. This is going to be a really interesting show because we've got a lot to dig in here. So those of you that are really interested in investing on this, a small property, or just taking your current home and transforming it, we're going to go over a lot of information today, which will be awesome. And without further ado, I'd like to introduce Travis. Hey, Travis, thanks for coming on today.
Oh, hi, Natalie. Thanks for having me.
I was looking at what you're doing. I'm so impressed because you've been doing this for years, and I know firsthand when working with you on developing and building, you've had a lot of projects under your belt.
Yeah, you know, we've done quite a few together, haven't we?
Yeah. So I can say that firsthand.
Under your menu program, I think probably what was it, 5 years ago now? We started handling all of the marketing and sales in-house, and gosh, what a great program you have.
Yeah, it really helps. It really can. Well, you know firsthand because it allows you, with you having so much expertise, well, how to market and do what you need to do, but then gives you the benefit of getting in the MLS and where you need to go. So that's today there's so much to talk about with what you've done because your experience is tremendous, and I want to your Blue and Green Blue and Green Innovations. Tell us about what you're doing. What got you into saying, hey, it's time to set up this type of company to help everybody out there with the changes?
Well, I think that there's a couple of parts to it, really. I don't know that it was so much a conscious effort or decision where we said, hey, let's do this, as it was a matter of one thing was falling into place after the other. And eventually we said, well, look, we have control of a complete supply line here, or supply chain. All we need to do is fill in a couple of these gaps, and then, you know, we'll be able to have that total one-stop shop. But really, I wanted to back up just a little bit. When you were introducing me, it got me thinking, hey, so much of what we do is a result of us working with you. And I don't think I've ever even mentioned this to you before, but really...
Thank you.
You're welcome. And
I think we lost you for a second there. Can you hear us? I think Travis is going to call right back. This wonderful thing, technology is beautiful, but we all are actually calling into the studio from different locations, and he'll be calling us right back to go into what we were discussing, which is, I'm so excited today, though, because a lot of people on the will be listening in and not always taking advantage of the extra investing that you can do on a smaller scale. So he's going to be calling us right back, and we'll plug him in. We'll take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also
we'll
be one
right
of the best
in
investments
second.
Of your capital if it's handled
that was
correctly.
That was
in the United States, we
yeah.
are fortunate to have the tax write-off
Sorry.
That we take for granted while owning property. To obtain
Perfect.
The best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you. We do advise that you coordinate with your accountant and real estate attorney so your plan is intact. We have all learned through this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you after consulting with the experts. We set you up to win.
We are back to Realty Universal Radio. This is Natalie Mullinex, and we have Travis Whitmire on the line. The beautiful thing about doing these podcasts, which you all, many listen to us, can download at your convenience, we get to call in from where we are, so sometimes technology isn't perfect. So Travis is back on. Welcome back, Travis, and we'll just jump in right where we left off.
Oh, all right. Great. So I think what I was saying was I've been going back and forth between heavy emphasis on either construction real estate. And the reason for that is when I first started, I didn't even have the experience in real estate, but it was almost as if you could do no wrong. You bought something, and then, you know, as soon as you could list it, it was already worth 15% more. And then I started doing that and in California, I think back in the 90s, and then migrated over to the Big Island, and then, you know, cutting out some of the stuff that's not as interesting, basically took a project in the Big Island and rolled it into an equity, started an art gallery on the Big Island, and, you know, kind of jumped into a whole other line of work, so to speak, and then eventually came back over to Oahu to be closer to family. And in the course of all of that was took what we were able to fund the Big Island, which was the ability to perform construction services, and built up a construction company. And, you know, the great thing about real estate is if you can find a good deal, you can go from nothing to something pretty quick, and pretty much starting from zero. When we came over to Oahu, within 6 months, we were able to, you know, save up enough to buy a house. And I worked with a couple, and through an agreement of sale, we purchased a home.
Wow.
And, you know, got back into the real estate thing, and something clicked, and it was pretty much I'd been doing performing services with my construction company for those few months, you know, working out the capital to get it back into real estate. And it was right when the economy was starting to take a nosedive globally, and I realized, hey, if I want to stay busy here, probably the best way to hedge my bets is to buy my own project. So we already had the one, and I said, you know, I love it. It's done really well for me. That's how I actually put myself through college was I can't
wow.
take the credit for it. Again, it was during that time when real estate was doing so well that you couldn't. But fortunately, I got out. It was a great way to make a living. So
oh, you need to take
the
credit, though, because you still did it. Yeah.
Well, I guess I right, you know, right thing, right time, and a clear focus of what I wanted to do. Which was actually go to school, and so the universe lined up in such a way where what needed to happen did, and so for that I'm thankful. And but back over to Oahu, we were able to to look at some good deals and realize that we want to stay busy to ensure that we have what we need is to just buy our own projects. I would not
right.
be reliant upon doing, having a construction company in a down economy. So we started getting into, I remember the first, let's see, there was this unbelievable teardown in Khaleesi, which I'm actually, interestingly enough, I'm driving by it right now.
That's too funny.
Back in 2008, I think, towards the end of 2008 about it. And what it was there was a tie-up on cash. And, it just, again, it was one of these things where I was scouring the market. Interesting here is when I said we got to get back into the real estate and not just an emphasis on construction, I built up a company pretty big. I had like 25 people working various projects, and I was getting burnt on the construction aspect of it because that seemed like more of a job, where real estate seems like something you can sink yourself into more so.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? It's there's getting up, going to
exactly.
work to make money, and then there's being involved in something that has to do that just has a little more significance to your life. And it was one of those start over moments where I said, okay, this is what we're putting everything into. And the interesting story is I went and printed up every single listing of every property on Oahu and separated them into like 20 different piles of REOs, short sales, fixer uppers, multiple unit properties, on and on. And I think just by doing that and taking a few months of where every day I would drive by all of these properties, not only did I learn every neighborhood on Oahu very well, but I learned all about the different types of properties and where we could find ourselves a niche based off of what our resources were, because it wasn't like we didn't have a blank checkbook. There were still limits.
Right.
And we...
So you weeded through. Weeded through a lot. Weeded through a lot of properties, right? Find the right one.
Pretty much starting like with every listing and then working our way through weeding. And eventually what we found is that where we could do well was finding a property that was just bad enough where it scared everybody else off, but with our own experience, we knew that it was still salvageable. And at the same time, it had to be bad because it was they were all cash deals. Banks wouldn't lend on them, and but they couldn't be for just the novice investor because those ones were too easy and there'd be too much competition. So it really was finding the needle in the haystack over and over again. And that's essentially what we built our business on. And I need to back up just a little bit here. When I started the investment company with the focus on real estate, adding construction services, the premise behind all of it was, and the shift from just construction into a real estate with a construction service, the premise behind all of it was that we would be looking for the opportunity to help sellers that had unrealized potential property. So I didn't start off thinking, let's go find really terrible houses, buy them in full, fix them up and sell them for a big profit. It was more so, let's find people that are selling their homes that are undervalued because of the condition. We will offer to improve the condition, therefore allowing them to realize potential that that they had, and we would split the margins.
So you would go in a partnership, so to speak, but you would actually do the work and then let them reap
the
benefits.
That was the hope, and all in all, it only worked a couple of times because I think it was just such a foreign concept to people,
uh-huh.
We did do that a few times, but we realized we could just take on some of our own projects, and we weren't opposed to the partnerships, but again, I mean, partnerships aren't always easy, and
I'm gonna laugh. After being an entrepreneur my whole life, I like try to stay away from them.
Yeah, what's the quickest sinking ship? The partnership, right?
Right. It's just, I've always tried to stay away, and I hear horror stories a lot. But I mean, it does happen where you need to do it. But at times, so you were doing. So is that how? I want to talk just a little bit about the CPRs and what they mean. Is that how you kind of got into CPR in properties? Because you're so good at that.
Well, it's interesting because there is. I mean, as as I'm asked a question of where I am or what I'm doing or where it came from, it makes me look at, you know, the whole entire process laid out. And as I started with, you know, small entry-level basic fixer-uppers that we could then give to first-time buyers in an entry-level market, we eventually just our resources grew. And as our resources grew, so did our desire to be involved in more lucrative projects. And generally that means that you're looking for multiple build opportunities on one lot, because really the value is in the land. And if you can add value by another house, or if you can buy a property and fix up one unit on the property, which is really like in our opinion, the best deal that we were always looking for, is a lot. You could build multiple homes with a house already on it, because for one, it was easier to get backing with investors or financiers on it, because, you know, as a fail-safe, there's always something that you could get out of it. It wasn't tied up in permitting forever. It was a bare lot that you couldn't do anything with. So, I mean, there's usually like, worst-case scenario, we could break even. And then second, usually by the time that you buy it and fix up and sell the first house, you've paid for the land, so you're free and clear on the second lot. Right?
That's fantastic. Here in Hawaii, though, they call it CPRing, right? Well, you pretty much on a small, for the most part, would you do a condominium property regime here with these lots, or is there another way to do that?
Well, there's actually a couple of different ways. And as we look for bigger projects to be involved in, we also look for ways to avoid some of the more laborious aspects of development, which would be going through, you mentioned another way, which would be going through a full subdivision process. So, as you know, a CPR is just a contractual way to divide property amongst the owners, and it's not even recognized at the city and county level the same way as other forms of division are. So, this is something that allows you to go in and, with less effort, be able to divvy up the property and the way that the property is used. So, there are a lot of other factors, such as zoning and all of the things that pertain to normal permitting process are still in play. But you know, again, it was just one of the things where it evolved, and we looked and said, well, how can we find unrealized potential? So remember when I was talking about putting all the properties in different stacks? One of the stacks that I always have was, okay, it's multi-unit or has potential to be subdivided or CPR'd. And the more we looked into how do you divide property, the more it just became obvious that a CPR was just the path of least resistance. That's the best way that I could describe it.
Because I want to interject a little bit, because of my background, and I used to do a lot of, in the 80s and 90s, we would get into, with builders. I did some developing myself, spot lots, which is what you could do with CPRs here, and then also got into raw land to record plat with builders, which would take, you know, it could be a year and a half, 2-3 year process, and then sell out the developments. So for our listeners, we have a lot of people that listen archive because they love to download the podcast and it works on their own schedule. For our listeners, I wanted to see, so for example, if you, the idea of a CPR, or saying it's the least hassle and it's done more on small lots because it's a smaller subdivision concept, right, rather than a large, we can do it large too, but I mean it would be more of a small one.
Well, on the mainland, in different states.
Huh?
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Like on the mainland in different states, for example, over the years, we used to look at, you know, say a lot and say, hey, this lot, it's a quarter acre lot. Okay, you can only build one house. But if it's a 3/4 acre lot, you may be able to build 3 houses. And so they wouldn't call it a CPR, but it would be a small development project, which is much easier than if you get into the larger projects. The larger projects end up, depending on where you are and which vicinity you're in, could, you know, if you're dealing with 20, 30, 50, 100 homes, could entail the counties and the city saying, hey, you have to put in sewer and curbs and gutter and be involved in the infrastructure of this community. So the beautiful thing for the smaller investor that we want to, you know, get out to today on the show is, if you do find a property and you have a property, lots of times you're going to go buy something and say it's $400,000 and it's a large lot. It's really worth it to go to the county, city, or zoning office and find out, hey, can this be divided? Because there's different types of zoning everywhere, you know, whether you're having agricultural or, you know, residential. And what Travis is talking about is being able to go in and find that needle in the haystack and go through a lot of multiple properties and see if you can do that, right? And buy a property, CPR it, or divide it if you're in another, and then take that one property and you could build on the other lot and then have full profit on that other lot, right? So I'm just kind of trying to chunk it down for listeners that don't know what a CPR is or how they would do it in a small subdivision. So here in Hawaii, on the CPR, what the lots in Hawaii are a lot smaller than in a lot of states. Or that we're, how you're allowed to build on, you're allowed to build on a very small lot here, where in some areas it has to be, you know, minimum quarter acre, minimum, you know, half an acre, et cetera, right? So that's what kind of, there's a lot to learn in that aspect of how to figure out if you can divide or not. Right. Travis?
Times when you might do one or the other. Right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
So a good example would be right now we're involved in a development that is in an Ag 1 zoning, and it's in an El Paso zone. So we can't actually subdivide. So that means all the parcels are CPR'd. Now, the thing there that you come up against, and this is just one example of the many, many different facets of doing a development, is that within one contiguous parcel, you can only have one septic tank as per code for the Department of Health. So that means that now every other unit has to have an EP system, which is very expensive. So now you're thinking you're going to get out of the expensive and the timely pursuit of a subdivision by going through the CPR, but now with a CPR, because it's just a contractual division and it's not something that gives you a new parcel, you are limited to the zoning specs of one parcel. And so there is a lot of that. You're always looking at that min-max, what can you do, what are your limitations for one versus the other. But generally speaking, if I can CPR something, I would choose that over a subdivision, just because the very nature of a subdivision is that generally the government agency or agencies are expecting you to bring up that raw land to a current standard. So current standards 50 years ago are different than current standards now. And regardless of where you are, if you're in a residential zoning in the middle of nowhere, you're going to have to put in curb and gutter and sidewalks and street lamps, and you know, your streets have to be, you know, wide. You might have to bring in infrastructure and all of that. And that just gets really, really, really expensive on every level. So
absolutely,
if you can do a CPR, then you don't have to put in those same things. And what that also allows is for you to pass on the savings to the end buyer, right?
Right, I love it. And you're such a pro at doing this here in Hawaii with the CPRs and all the different zonings and what issues and who can do and what they can't do. So I want to mention, though, also your contact information, Travis. It's your Travis at blueandgreeninnovations.com, right? And your phone number here is
426-5879. Yes.
Sorry about that.
Yes, correct. And that's our office number and the email, correct, and our website. And then I'm sure if you've looked at the website, you've seen that we actually have a parent company with five separate divisions. And I could get more into those later, but, you know, talking about the CPR and a subdivision more, just because I think it is something that obviously is of interest to us, but it's also fairly complex. I would say it's easy in the sense that once you know how to do something, everything is easy. But at the same time, almost every single project that we're ever involved in, there's the unknown factor. And that's one of, I would say, that the areas of greatest difficulty in doing any sort of development in Hawaii is that you never really know what you're getting into. There's not any one book or any one pamphlet or piece of information where you can read through everything and then know what you're supposed to do and then go ahead and make a plan and just do it. You're always going to come up against something. And so I would say, you know, a large part of the experience and ability comes from being able to navigate through the unknowns and, you know, being able to solve the problems. Because I'm not kidding, every single project, there's always a something. And the something may be that an ordinance changed the day before, or, you know, somebody else exactly. came into position that wants to enforce something that has never been enforced. And so that's
amazing.
Done it, you
but
know
now,
exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and your company, though, you actually have plans in situations where somebody can hire you, right, to go ahead and be the consultant on the project.
And absolutely.
Help
you know,
them
that,
avert
that
problems.
Goes into,
yeah.
And you know, I didn't want to just stop at the CPRs. When I had mentioned earlier that working with you has been a crucial, I would say, a crucial part of our development to become what we have become, it was not ever a, like I said, a conscious choice to, hey, let's have a parent company and then have five separate divisions all doing all of these different things. It was, like I said, an organic process of going through an experience, realizing that, you know, it's difficult to work with partners, and every time you're working with someone else in a different aspect of whatever it is in the development, you're taking on a partner, whether it's a contractor, an architect, or an engineer, or whomever. And we eventually just continued to move forward in absorbing all aspects of the service. So where it started off as real estate investment and then a construction services, we eventually added design services and then architecture services. And then when I started working with you, we looked to bring on the marketing services so we could handle through our own abilities, the marketing of our homes through your menu service. And that, interestingly enough, was coupled with the fact that we were doing some investments and building ventures
right.
in Indonesia. And as we were going over there to handle those projects, it was very easy to connect the dots with the importing and exporting. And so we started bringing in building materials for our projects here. And then, you know, the real light bulb came on, which was, hey, we're bringing in building materials. We're handling the marketing. We're staging our homes already. Why don't we bring in the furnishings for our homes? And basically,
Smart.
At any given time, we have 10 showrooms for our furnishings. And not only that, but the homes are they always go quick. Whenever they're furnished, I would not build a home or look to do a development and not furnish my homes. It's just the difference between us furnishing them and not is right away when someone walks in. There's one or two things happens. Either they want the furnishings, and that's great, go ahead and buy them, or they, you know, they'd love the home because it looks so nice with the furnishings. What we found is that, generally speaking, people wanted to buy the homes with the furnishings. So
you're right, like you and I could see a place and visualize it from years and years of doing this, but most people, they want to feel that ambiance. They want to feel living there, and the furnishings give you that whole, give you the whole picture.
Well, and there's a couple of things. I mean, one, obviously, you're hitting a couple of revenue streams. Two, you're able to give a palette of visualization for people that otherwise may not have it. Three, you're able to design a home knowing what will look good in the home and being able to create those furnishings. And that's where it evolved to is we started actually creating and fabricating our own furnishings, and that's what led to our whole products division. And, you know, that's, I would say, how – if you look at the totality of everything we're doing, that was the organic process where we just absorbed one thing after the other. And eventually we realized, hey, we have a total control of a supply chain. And then getting back to what you mentioned earlier, where we offer the consultation services, absolutely, we realized that we're a one-stop shop from everything that has to do with development, from acquisition through implementation all the way into liquidation. And knowing that we organically evolved as a result of needing all of these services and the ability to connect the dots, which is really where the biggest issue was, and there was an inconsistency, there's a disconnect anytime you went from one facet into the next. And so that's why it was so important for us to have the design team working in conjunction with the construction team and this, under the same roof. And then once we're able to bring in the marketing and financial analysis and development, then again, we're able to have everything under one roof and, you know, just have be able to streamline the process, control the time frames and the quality and all of these other things. So it's just now, you know, like you said, the consultation service, it was more along the lines of, you know, we are a one-stop shop. It's a great time to be offering services, especially with the fact that we can look at any aspect of it and know what comes before it and know what comes after it.
I love that because you're really catering to the public. You're giving people what they need all in a one-stop shop. And then it actually is going to pass on and be able to save the client more money as well. And so you can do, if somebody's listening and they want to do just one lot or they want consulting, you can actually get in there and help them so they can take the whole process from beginning to end.
Sure, and we could join in at multiple levels, whether that is a level as a consultant, whether as possibly as a joint developer. I mean, traditionally speaking, most of the developments would come about by somebody putting up the land and then somebody who has the expertise in development coming and partnering up with them and, you know, being able to use the land. And it's talk about the win-win situation. The person with the land generally doesn't have the experience or the financial means to see a whole development. And then from the developer's perspective, if you don't have to tie up, you know, whether it's a dollar or $50 million on property that's going to sit there while you entitle it, there's less risk. And then ultimately, there's more margin to either, you know, share or spread around or whatnot. So it's really advantageous in that regard. And but again, we're happy on either side of that fence. And ultimately, I think you can I explain this to people all of the time. You can take on the project. You can do the whole thing. What you're paying someone for isn't necessarily because it's so difficult. It's because, one, their resources. They've probably already gone through so many different things where they know what pitfalls to avoid that could be costly. And it brings back to something that my father sent me an email yesterday. It was a really funny story. Someone was asking a successful lady, to what do you attribute your success? And her answer was, good decisions. And then the next question was, well, to what do you attribute to your good decisions? And the answer was bad decisions. So
in life, we're all gonna
make mistakes. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when, and things are going to happen. And, you know, sometimes the harshest realities are the best lessons. And I am always interested in working with people that made big mistakes that are doing well, because if I've seen that they've had that opportunity to learn and they've taken that opportunity, there's a chance they're not going to repeat it. Now, you don't want to work with someone who makes the same mistake over and over again. But it's the same when you're looking at the development. You want to be able to avoid the really costly aspects or pitfalls that you would not be aware of until you were already neck deep in it. And it's really easy to get lost in all of it.
And since you're such an expert on it, you can avert those pitfalls. You can see them. I do the same thing in consulting in real estate when I'm brought in on projects or other commercial things, and you can see, you know the steps to take and what to do to really. It saves a lot of time. It saves a lot of time, and a lot of cost, a lot of headaches. And why reinvent the wheel, right? When they're going to go in and what they want to do is not really hard to do, but can be hard, and that's where you come in to help them. And design it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's somewhat, I would say, real similar in the regard of where you offer a menu for people to choose what aspect or to what level they want to be involved. But ultimately, and you know, I think that's a great thing, and it gives people the opportunity to try it out and see if they have that natural ability or the ability to learn. But nothing is going to ever take the place of all of your experience and your ability to read the market in real time and say, the most important thing would be, hey, I've done this before, or my best friend did this before. I know that doesn't work. Let's try this. And if you've never been in that situation, if you didn't ever have to, you know, learn that lesson, well, life has a way of presenting you with the same lessons to learn eventually until you learn it, right?
Isn't that the truth? It's like if nothing changes, nothing changes until you finally change it. And it's kind of, it's
I always tell my daughter, I said, if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got.
And it's so true. It's so true. And it's just, you know, lots of times we're in these industries for so many years and we don't realize how much of an expert we become. And then it's, you know, you hear that old story where the ship had a plumbing problem and they were bringing in this person and this person and spending hundreds of dollars, you know, nobody could figure out the problem. Then they brought this one gentleman in who was really a pro. He tapped a couple places on the pipe, fixed, in 10 minutes it was fixed. And he hands them a bill for $10,000. And they're like, no, we don't get to pay you $10,000. What? You were only here 10 minutes. And he's like, you didn't pay me for my time. You paid me for my expertise. And I could have saved
exactly.
you a lot of money if you just went to the right one. And so it really is. It's really, it's so true. And it's just, I love to help the little guy and then also the big guy. So, like, for example, on the CPRing, or if they're developing on the mainland and they just, you know, a lot of people don't realize that you've got gold in your yard, basically, in the sense that you may be able to pull a lot off. You could maybe sell that lot or build on that lot, sell that property, and then pay your house off and then still have, you know, and just make it a win-win. There's so many scenarios that people aren't thinking out of the box, and that's, you know, and here in Hawaii, the one thing I wanted to mention on the CPR, it's the condominium property regime, the difference with the CPR versus splitting the lot completely is, right, all the owners have rules and regulations, even though they can be small, right? So you're basically taking the property, and they kind of they share that, right? They're sharing the property.
And you know, that's an interesting aspect. There's pros and cons. I didn't really touch on that, but within a subdivision, it should be noted that, generally speaking, there are, you know, major and minor subdivisions, and a minor subdivision would be constituted by the drawing of one line, meaning if you take a lot and just do the bulk subdivision is where you just cut a line down the middle. Those are pretty straightforward, and if you're just going to do, you know, lot A and lot B or lot 1 and lot 2, you're generally not going to run into the same level of bureaucracy that you would when you're doing a major subdivision.
Okay.
So that's something to be considered, because ultimately speaking, having your own parcel is a higher form of ownership, in the sense that you're not having to negotiate any terms with any other owners on the property at any given time, such as sharing space, sharing a fence, sharing the driveway. In a CPR, there are bylaws. There is a board. There's a director. There's members. There's amendments that you have to create if you want to do something different. And there are things that you just cannot do, whether that's good or bad. I mean, maybe what you can't do is have a helicopter pad or 7,000 chickens. Which is fine,
right,
but what if you're
right.
a chicken farmer, right? I mean, now,
right,
if you're a helicopter
exactly.
pilot or chicken, you know, farmer, you're like, that's a bad deal for you. So you maybe don't want to be in that relationship. I mean, you are tied to other people, and I mean, they're very, very common in Hawaii, and they're becoming, you know, increasingly more common in residential.
I think they're common too, because the sizes of the lots are so small here, right? You know, that overall, not everything, but overall, it's pretty small. So then the way it's tied in, it kind of works. It still works because they're able to share the resources.
I think it has a lot to – I mean, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but I have had extreme difficulties in dealing with government bureaucracies at a level where it's kind of – it's mind-blowing on occasion. The problem
that's
is that,
everything.
Like I said,
yeah.
you can't – Well, you can't. You don't get a list of a checklist. Like, here's 10 things. If you meet all these things, you can go ahead and do it. And
right.
the fact is that there's, you know, it seems to be the flavor, whatever flavor it is that week is what's going on. There's no hard and fast rule. No hard and fast rule. It's like halfway between a third world country and a first world country, in a sense that it's like you don't know who you're supposed to smile at to get what, but at the same time, it's not guaranteed that if you do these things this way, you can accomplish it. So point being, I think that, and this is just a theory here that I'm maybe putting out on a spot, but I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that CPRs can avoid a lot of the government bureaucracy, because
that
ultimately, if I could subdivide, it was the same amount of cost and the same amount of time, I would subdivide every time. It's just the government makes it so difficult to go through the process, and it's so costly. And then by the time you're done, you realize you didn't improve the neighborhood, you didn't improve the value, you didn't improve the city, you didn't improve anything. All you did was just waste time and money for no good reason. Ultimately, that has to be passed on to the consumer. And what is something worth? It's worth that someone will pay for it. And if someone's going to pay X amount of dollars for a square piece of land, the general buyer, I don't think, is really that concerned with whether it's a CPR or a subdivision. I think usually those things come about down the road when someone wants to do something, and then they go, oh, you can't. It's a CPR. You know, a good example would be, a lot of times we will be doing a CPR. We did, as you know, we did, I think, 8-10 in Cava last year, and they were large residential lots, R5, most of them over 10,000 square feet. So what that means, based off of the zoning, that you're able to put in a couple of homes. So the way that the Department of Health determines how you can process your plan for approval to then go into the building is based off of how many your bedroom count. So the great example is that there is a requirement of land size for a septic tank. So my current understanding is that you need 10,000 square foot of land per individual wastewater system, which means that if you have, a residentially zoned R5 piece of property with 15,000 square feet, you're looking at it and say you've been in development for a year and like, okay, great, that's R5, that's 5,000, I need 5,000 square foot per lot. I could build three houses. You buy the property thinking you could build three houses. So there's your analysis. What you come to find out is that actually you can only put one septic tank. And here's the clincher is, because you can only put in one septic tank, there's a limit of how many bedrooms can go per septic tank. So now you can only have five bedrooms. So the Department of Health will not allow it to be more than five bedrooms. So now what that means is you have five bedrooms. That's the most that you're going to get out of that piece of property, whether it's 10,001 square feet or 19,999,
right.
You can only put one septic tank on there, and you can only have five bedrooms. And why can you have five bedrooms? Because it's a CPR, it's not a subdivision, and you're sharing a lot, and there's one parcel. And because if you were to subdivide that parcel into three parcels, you could then have three septic tanks and five bedrooms on each parcel, which
that
then now you're looking at the difference between, so you're looking at, okay, CPR, I can have five bedrooms. If I subdivide this, I can have 15 bedrooms.
Right, that makes sense.
And now you're looking at resale value. Okay, what are three homes with five bedrooms worth compared to a total of five bedrooms on this whole parcel? Huge difference, right?
Huge, yes, huge. And that's why they need to call you here, too. That's why they need to call you. I'm going to give your phone number here. It's 808-426-5879, 808-426-5879. We're talking with Travis Whitmire. He's president and founder of blueandgreeninnovations.com. Well, it's Blue and Green Innovations, but you can also go to the website blueandgreeninnovations.com. And, it's so important. Because it's really nice, though, for people not to be afraid of trying this, when they don't know what they're doing, because there is a lot of profit in it, and it can help them when people are trying to invest even on a smaller scale,
people. This is an interesting place. I don't know if I think you'd have to look at it case by case, but one part of me wants to say, if you really want to go into the investing and you have a piece of property that you're interested in, I would say, one, either start out small and learn as you go, or two, bring on somebody who is an expert who has the ability to help you navigate, and maybe look at a longer play where you're not going to make all of your money or your fortune off this one deal. You're actually going to learn on it with somebody else who's an expert. You're going to split it a couple times, and then if you're really that set on doing it yourself, go on to it with the experience and with the knowledge that you gain from working with someone who is an expert. And you just cannot replace the value of working with somebody who knows what they're doing. And not to discourage anybody from taking on the task, but I don't know that I would highly recommend somebody who has this large parcel to just go in and try to figure it all out on their own. I mean, if they have the means,
right.
You know,
right.
But the most important thing is surround yourself with excellence, surround yourself with experts, build your team and have good key players in place. And then ultimately, if what I found and the whole process here and the journey is, one, it's not where you end up, it's what you do along the way. And that's just so important, because that brings me to my next point, which is it's not a matter of not having problems, because what
right.
I realized a long time ago was if I would always be discouraged, like, look at all these problems, dang it, this problem, that problem. I woke up one day and said, thank God for all of these problems. If there were no problems, I wouldn't be having a means of income here. The problems are what are providing me with the opportunity to come up with solutions, and it's the ability to come up with solutions
that
add value to something. So it became a paradigm shift where it was no longer this avoidance of all of the problems. It actually became looking for problems and then having confidence that we could come up with solutions. So ultimately, my prescription for having a good solution is one, surround yourself with excellent people and experts. And if you do that, you stand a much better chance of doing well in this business. And
absolutely.
That's
the challenges are always their challenges are not problems, and it makes so much sense. Hey, we only have about 15 minutes left. It went so fast. We didn't even put in a commercial except for the one drop call, right? This is, see how fast it goes by? We have to have you back, too. I wanted to touch a little bit. That's so perfect on the CPRs and dividing the land, because it's such a really wanted to bring that out in this show today, because so many people are looking for ways to do things that's right in front of them that they may not even see.
Let me bring up something really important. I want to bring up one, just in closing on that, if you'd like. One important thing is that with a CPR, essentially you can CPR a doghouse or your kitchen sink, because it is just a division of a prescribed ownership contractually. So you can delineate however you want what you want to CPR. So there's a common misconception in what the intent of the CPR is, and you know, it's similar to what a co-op was way back when. Mm-hmm. But the thing that you have to keep in mind, and this is where I see people get into trouble, is just because you can CPR something doesn't mean that you can build on it. So you have to look, it's a very holistic approach, and you have
right.
to have a large overview as you go into a project and try to outline your objectives for the entire project and how you're going to meet those objectives. Because like I said, if you're going in where you're compartmentalizing from the beginning without a bigger picture view, and your whole intent is, I'm going to CPR this, I'm then going to go get permits, I'm going to build, you might miss a really important fact, such as, sure, you can CPR it because there's no one that's going to tell you you can't, but that doesn't mean you can build on it.
Exactly. And that's a good point.
You want to be able to do both.
No, it's such a good point. In the real estate industry, if it isn't your own property now and you're going to buy a property, it's crucial. Everyone knows on this, so you can go to realityuniversal.com and we can place you with people in different areas. But it's crucial to make sure that your contract states that you're going to have a feasibility study. So you can go in, make the offer, put the money down, but you're going to have a feasibility study to make sure you can do X, Y, and Z. And if you want to build a certain size house, you have to make sure that you can build that size house, because lots of different places have, you know, you have restrictions and setbacks and all kinds of other issues like Travis is talking about that can come up. So you want to make sure that in your contract you have a really 30-day feasibility. It could be 60, whatever you work out, so that if there's something that pops out even in the investigative process, you can get out of that contract. And then, of course, like you said, there's going to be things that are going to come up that, especially in Hawaii, because you're right, Travis, I've dealt with a lot of issues in Hawaii. I had a property on selling a 100-acre property on Hana in Maui years ago, and you could definitely pull off a 20-acre lot. And actually, I had a buyer. It was my listing. I had a client buyer come in from San Jose, and it was my listing, so they would have been a customer. And we went to the building department, and we were told, no, you can't do it, even though in writing you could. And you really could, but they didn't want it done, so they told us no. you know, and that's kind of, that sounds a little blatant, but it was the truth. And I won't, well, I'm not mentioning names, but those are things that happen, huh?
Well, then there's one more level. There's what you can do contractually. There's what you should be able to do based off of what the bureaucracy of, that is involved and has that limiting factor or choice in the matter says. And then there's what the community is accepting too. And ultimately,
exactly.
I would
good
like to
point.
Point out that, I mean, and I have a guiding light. I mean, many guiding lights, but one of the guiding lights with development is I believe that it's important to focus on improving the community, adding value to the community, adding value to the lives of people in Hawaii or wherever you're going. And your focus can't be so narrow, and it's very easy to fall into this trap, whether it's real estate or development or anything to do with money, it's to follow money. I mean, first and foremost, follow God and let that be your choice. And second, if you're following God, then God loves all of us, and God wants the world to be a harmonious place. And if you look at that, with or without the spiritual aspect, just creating value by allowing there to be harmonious aspect to what you're creating, you're not looking to do a 7,000-unit subdivision at the end of a rural country road with no entitlement. So my whole point is,
right.
there has been master planning. There has been some forethought, you know, way back when as to where things should go and how they should be done. And ultimately, I'm looking to infill if we're building. I'm looking to create in areas where it's already been somewhat planned. A great example is I've never developed on the North Shore, and that's where I've lived for a long time. Point being, there's one road in, there's one road out, there's no sewer, there's just not the infrastructure for it. So putting in hundreds of homes in the wrong
right.
place, I think, is a bad idea. It doesn't add, ultimately, it doesn't really add the value. Now, I was at a meeting recently, and someone was talking about how opposed they were to all the development in Kaka'ako, and I was like, wow, I totally disagree with you. I think that's fantastic. There's vertical building in an urban environment allows for people to be walking around. That's good for the environment.
Right.
It's good. It's,
right.
You're taking great use of space. You're, a place where there could be three houses, you now have 300 people living. You know, I mean, it's not taxing on the roads and the infrastructure and all that. So I do think it's important to, you know, have, if you're looking at the bigger picture, ultimately I think you'll do better if you're looking to add value, and if you are adding value, you're concerned about what are the ramifications of your choice. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
No, I totally agree with you. And you've been, this is just, and I know you firsthand, so I know I can depend, you're the real deal. And again, your contact information is 808-426-5879. We're talking with Travis Whitmire, president and founder of Blue and Green Innovations. And website's blueandgreeninnovations.com. We only have a few minutes left here, and we were going to talk about, I was going to ask you about the smart technology and your products and all, and because I know you have five different divisions and you've tied it all in. So to kind of
okay,
wrap
I,
up.
I
and
can
the,
give
and
you a quick.
Yeah, I want
to
do
try
like
to
the
make
smart
tech.
Well, so because some people listening say they want to just go in and stick with what they have, but they want to gut or renovate or do their design, so they need architectural advice. They also
mm-hmm.
would like to maybe tie in the smart technology. So if you can touch on that, we only have a few minutes to kind of detail how your designs and what you're doing, the solution is a one-stop place.
Well, let me express something I think is the most important thing to us with Blue and Green Innovations, and that is that Blue and Green Innovations is a lifestyle brand providing eco-minded or sustainable products and services from concept to completion. And what that really means is, as I mentioned before, is a total control of a supply chain and the ability to choose whom we work with, why we're working with that person, and ultimately everything that we do is based off of the premise of sharing or expanding our vision locally and globally. And how we're doing that is we're providing products and services that are vehicles that carry the vision. So as you know, if you see our website at blueandgreeninnovations.com, you'll see that one of our divisions is a products division where we create high-end luxury and hospitality products. And the idea is that as we create these beautifully aesthetic items, we're also integrating high levels of technology. And the point being is that that's sustainable in our view by allowing for the ability to have something that has a high level of use and looks well, it lasts longer. And if something lasts longer and is made with high quality products, it's durable. And if something is durable, it's the antithesis of disposable. And disposable is the antithesis of sustainable. As we are a sustainable company, that's our whole focus. And so long and short, look at everything that we make is I close my eyes and I see a little, you know, a little wagon or a little car. And on that car is the car is the product, but that car is driving around sharing the message. So ultimately we wanted to be able to share our vision of how important we feel it is on a geopolitical level as well as globally for the environment. But as I always tell people, I think there's plenty of people carrying that torch. I'm looking at it from more of a geopolitical ramifications, the world we pass on to our children. What does it mean with a multitude of the world's nations coming online from emerging from third world to first world, fighting for our natural resources? We need to be aware of how we're using these resources, what resources we're using, and making sure they're sustainable, because it's not a matter of depleting the forest and, oh, the world's mad at us and, you know, the grass is getting turned brown and scold us. It's a matter of, hey, you got too many hands in the cookie jar. People are going to start shooting and killing each other. That's a bad place to live. That's not the world we want to pass on. So tying in,
wonderful.
You know, you mentioned the smart technologies. The smart technologies is just one more caveat into the production of aesthetic products and features that use the technology, because we believe integrating new and emerging technologies allows us to stay more relevant and add longevity to our products, which just stays in line with everything we're doing. So smart technology, a good way for me to break that down quickly is we are creating personally adaptable environments through the use of smart technology that allows for the users to create scenes within their environment that either take on the persona of that person or have default settings. And you know, it's a great feature that not only adds value through comfort and convenience, but also you can do a lot of things to monitor energy use and security. And again, there's a lot of companies that do that, but we try to take it to another level where they're personally adaptable and adding elements of sensory perceptions that augment your senses. So we're using a lot of sights, sounds, smells, and that's how they become personally adaptable.
I never thought about that. It was smart technology. That's great. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, smart technology is not something that we created, and it's not something that you can only get through us, but we are incorporating that into our design. So really, you know, with the one-stop shop that we're providing, everything, whether we're making here's a good example. We're hired on as an architectural design firm to build a home for people, or we will then customize products within the home using imports that we source, knowing that in Hawaii everything has to be imported, so we can be in control of which vendor we use to source from and using somebody who also places an emphasis on sustainability. And then with those imports, we can then, with our design team, create a product, which will then go into the home that we build. I don't think we've even mentioned yet that we carry a license to the general contracting company, and that's an extension of our design build firm. So with our licensed construction company, we're able to install these products into the homes that we built that we designed using materials that we imported, and then ultimately we'll incorporate the smart technology.
I love it.
And if it's our own home, then it's the development. So the whole operating cycle would be buy a home, design a home, design products and a home with materials that we bring in, and then incorporate the smart technology, and then market and sell the home with furnishings that we also fabricate and put into our homes. And there's the five divisions, which are products, imports, design build, properties, and smart technology. And that is Blue and Green Innovations in a nutshell, one parent company with five separate divisions, all operating with anonymity and individually, but also creating a synergy with the ability to coalesce amongst themselves.
I love it. I love it. We have got to have you back, too, because we're running out of time. It's like we're running out of time. It says smart tech provides the clients with a simple and efficient means to control their environment, save money, and reduce waste. And Travis, you have such years of experience, that they can, you know, so people can, it truly is a one-stop shop. And So we're just about running out of time, and we're just going to end the show, and I want to bring you back. Again, your number is 808-426-579, and this has been really enlightening and awesome. We are just about, we'll come back, right? We'll get you back on here.
Yeah, absolutely. You can mention that as we're coming out of the gate, we've been offering a free consultation service to realtors and buyers, and you know, with our license as a general contractor, we're able to walk into a home and with confidence know exactly what's going on and point out some of the things that maybe be pitfalls, maybe some things that you should be asking for credits on, knowing that you'll have to repair them. Again, consultation with the zoning and the abilities and potentials of what you can and what you may or may not be able to do based off of the current understanding of codes, and you know, just another way to add value to the community, letting people make informed decisions and choices.
That is perfect. So we're going to wrap up because we're going to our studio will take us off the line. We kind of go.
Okay.
So this
Bye.
Is Travis Whitmer. This has been great. To everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.